Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, April 26th, 2021. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. House Bill 377 on social justice indoctrination passes Idaho Senate and heads to the governor's desk. Mask ordinance preemption bill likely dead in Idaho legislature. Washington legislature passes $59.2 billion two-year budget. And super spreader events in Ferry County. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho Senate voted 27-8 along mostly party lines in favor of House Bill 377 today, which is an attempt to satisfy demands by lawmakers who support the Idaho Freedom Foundation's demand to root out any social justice indoctrination in schools and colleges. Although opponents, including educators, the State Board of Education leaders, and the governor, think the bill addresses a problem that largely does not exist. The bill had passed in the Senate Education Committee earlier in the afternoon, with 10 of the 12 members of the public who testified opposing it. House Bill 377 now heads to Governor Brad Little's desk. The only Republican to vote against the bill in the Senate was Dan Johnson of Lewiston. On the Senate floor today, Democratic Senator Janie Ward Engelking of Boise sought to call out the Idaho Freedom Foundation. Ward Engelking said, "This legislation is not needed. Our universities and school districts already have procedures in place that will deal with any problem we have in curriculum. What's happening is we have a group that's put out for public release comments that our teachers are brainwashing our children with a liberal leftist indoctrination. And that's simply not true, and we need to call that out. If that were true, we would not be the reddest state in the nation. I feel like this is a year when teachers have worked harder than ever to keep our children in person when they could. They did it without a raise, and some of them with a cut in pay. This is a slap to their integrity. I just think it's time that we recognize it for what it is. It's a hostage situation to get our budget going through, and I think that's a dangerous path for us to be going down when we're passing policy that isn't needed because we can't get our appropriations through, and that is our job as a legislature. That is our top priority for being here." The Idaho House earlier this month killed the K-12 teachers budget and the higher education budget because of concerns about social justice indoctrination. Senate Education Committee Chair Stephen Thane of Emmett said on the Senate floor today, "The latest version of the bill introduced last Wednesday does not ban teaching of critical race theory, but just says educators cannot compel students to adopt or adhere to it." The Idaho Freedom Foundation took a neutral stance on the bill for just that reason. The lobbying group has sought to end the teaching of social justice or critical race theory, claiming it is rampant in Idaho's schools and colleges and amounts to indoctrination. They have also issued reports opposing the existence of diversity programs at BSU and the University of Idaho, diversity recruitment, and even the UI Women's Center as promoting social justice indoctrination. The report also classifies 10 majors at the University of Idaho as social justice indoctrination. The group and their supporters in the legislature say they don't like teaching that the U.S. has a racist and sexist history. Democratic Senator Melissa Wintrow of Boise said she wasn't allowed to participate in Little League as a skilled baseball player because she was a girl. She said sexism has affected her throughout her life. Wintrow also said the nation is in the middle of taking a hard look at race issues because of the killing of George Floyd. She said, "It is absolutely uncomfortable to talk about issues of race, class, and gender, but it's absolutely necessary." Democratic Senator David Nelson of Moscow told the Senate, We're doing this when we have no time to debate all-day kindergarten. We don't have time to make a concrete improvement to our K-12 education system, but we'll work on this. It just really distresses me. During the Senate Education Committee hearing on the bill earlier in the afternoon, Republican Senator Carl Crabtree of Grangeville tried to set a tone of compromise when he introduced the bill.
I think this bill deals with a concern that some have over indoctrination of our students. And as I work on things, I always try to find common ground, and I believe that none of us want to send our students to school to be indoctrinated. So what this is about is to talk more about how to teach our kids how to think and not what to think. And I think that's an important distinction. We want to teach the kids how to think and not what to think, and no one wants to have indoctrination created. So that's kind of what this bill addresses a little bit. But how did we get here? And I think it's important to talk about that for a couple of minutes. So started out, and I'm on the Finance Committee, and those of us on the Finance Committee work on budgets, and some of them that we work on are like higher ed budgets and the teacher pay budget has to do with the career ladder and others. So as we worked on these, we heard concerns in this building about things called critical race theory. We heard about social justice and that type of thing. And so we tried to craft some intent language into those budgets. And I'll use the higher ed budget as an example. We talked about how we would like to kind of minimize this thing. And we put a penalty in for one of the schools that we thought maybe was going a little out of bounds there. So another thing that we did is we said, okay, if you're spending money on that, by next year, give us a report on how much money you are spending toward those ends. And then the third thing we asked the State Board of Education to do was to provide a pick list of ideas that on student fees that could be optional and maybe allow students to opt out of some of these things they felt uncomfortable with. So we put that in our budgets, and we ran it over to the Senate, and we were fine with that, and we ran it, passed it through the Senate, ran it over to the House. Well, they weren't so excited about that. So then we ran teacher ladder budget, and we tried to think of ways to solve problems in that, but we didn't quite get there. We were within a few votes of getting it done, so I went back to the co-chairs and of JFAC, and they say, listen, you can't put any more policy in the intent language. You're going to have to get germane committees to work on this. And the germane committees is like this one here, the Education Committee here and the Education Committee in the House. So what we did there is what we're doing now, is a lot of people got a lot of ideas together, and those people generated, I think there were half a dozen maybe bills floating around trying to address these particular issues as germane or policy legislation, not finance legislation. So it went on and on and on, and everybody had an idea, and everybody had a solution, and as soon as, you know, some of us would agree with one of them, within hours, sometimes less than that, there were more ideas and fresh thoughts to change that. And it just went on. Finally, we drew a line in the sand and said, we're done. You know, we got to finish this. We got to get out of here. We got to go home. We'll never have an end to fresh thoughts and new ideas. So we ended up getting together about 20 people, I'm guessing, didn't count, to craft this language that you see here today. With the intent, again, of trying to come together with something that everybody could agree with. Now, we didn't get everybody on board, but we tried to. And there's a certain segment of our legislature that's not going to be enthusiastic and not be supportive of this. We tried. We just couldn't cover all the bases with this legislation. This legislation is not intended to be punitive. I have told my school people that you're going to see very little, if any, effect from this, probably none, because you're already providing a balanced education, and I would contend that most of our students in Idaho are receiving a balanced education. This bill will not affect them. We hear a lot of stories from other states, and we hear things that may be coming from the federal government and all of that, but when you start trying to nail it down here in Idaho, this may be more of a proactive idea and a solution to things that may be coming than it is a solution to problems that we have. But either way, this bill is here to intend to meet the needs of our legislature in terms of these concerns, because the legislature is the banker, whether we like it or not. And we may not be the sharpest folks in town, but we got the money. And so for us, we want to have a little input. If we're going to put public money into these public schools, we want to have some input into how that's being spent. So that's what this bill does. That's what the germane legislation, or the financial legislation and intent language we had in the budget bills does. So we're trying to just craft a little bit of a sideboards on some of these things to meet the needs of a lot of our constituency, but most of all, the bankers who are the legislators.
That was Republican Senator Carl Crabtree of Grangeville speaking to the House Education Committee this afternoon. Democratic Senators David Nelson of Moscow and Janie Ward Engelking had questions for Crabtree. Here's Nelson, Crabtree, and Ward Engelking, followed by a comment from Senate Education Committee Chair Stephen Thane of Emmett.
So this bill states the finding of the legislature that critical race theory undermines the objectives of subsection one of this section and exacerbates and inflames divisions on the basis of sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, national origin, or other criteria in ways contrary to the nation and well-being of the state of Idaho and its citizens. What is the concrete evidence that this is finding is based on? Do you have some real examples?
Senator Crabtree.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Nelson, you know, this was the feeling of the people who put this bill together. It included people in both parties. Not everybody agreed. This is the opinions of the people who agreed upon this language. And so I would leave it there.
Mr. Chairman, for a short follow-up. So, in other words, there's no evidence that it supports the findings? It's just all opinion?
Senator Crabtree.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator. There is evidence. There is evidence in many places, but it seemed inappropriate to those crafting this legislation to list those incidents and go through some sort of verification process. So this is the idea that came forward as a group of people sitting together trying to come through to a solution. Now, did everybody agree with this is a wonderful way to say it? And no. But sometimes it reminds me of the committee that was intended to make a horse and they ended up with a camel. You know, sometimes the outcome isn't exactly what everybody agrees to, but close.
Final follow-up, yeah. Senator Nelson.
Thank you again, Senator Crabtree. I guess I understand the rationale of the folks who were in the room writing this, but you're asking me as a legislator to support this legislation without any clear evidence that it supporting this finding. Is that? I guess I'm maybe that's more of a statement than a question, but I have a hard time supporting this without any evidence shown.
Senator Crabtree,
Mr. Chairman and Senator Nelson. I do not expect everybody to support this legislation. We did not get unanimity, and I would understand that you would not be able to support this for the reasons stated. But I think as you look at the people that worked on this and the amount of time that they spent working on this, I think they came to a conclusion that this is a pretty good document that our people can agree to within the legislature, and then we can get our budgets to the higher education and to the teacher ladder and many other things done. So sometimes, you know, legislation is like making sausage. It's not such a wonderful thing, but it's the best we can do at the time.
Senator Ward Engelking.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for a comment, I guess, you know, I think this slaps at teachers and our universities and our colleges in a year when they've done an really heroic effort to keep our schools open and in-person learning whenever possible. And the whole idea that there's brainwashing and indoctrination being done by educators in this state, just hits me really hard as a classroom teacher for 33 years, because I know it's not taking place. If it were true, we would not be one of the reddest states in the nation, because the what I'm hearing is the indoctrination is a liberal leftist agenda. And so, you know, I just think this is kind of like the boogeyman that's under our children's bed, and it may seem scary to him or her, but it's not real. And so that's why this legislation is upsetting to me.
Thank you, Senator Ward Engelking. I will make a comment at this point. I've got some grandchildren in public schools in Idaho. One of them is a senior in high school this year. She talked to me about the critical race theory being taught to her as a senior in high school, and she was concerned about how the teacher was using it and pushing his views. So I don't think it's just a boogeyman. I think this is something that's important. We need to talk about, and I think the important word here is on line 32, compel students to personally affirm, adopt, or adhere to any of the following tenets. We're really not, this bill doesn't say that you can't teach critical race theory. Doesn't say that in the bill. In fact, on line 22 where it says, in subsection 3A of this section, which are those three items that we find objectionable, the line goes on to say, often found in critical race theory. So you can teach it, but what you can't do is compel students to affirm that that's the case.
And that was Senate Education Committee Chair Stephen Thane of Emmett, and before that, you heard Senator Carl Crabtree of Grangeville, Senator Janie Ward Engelking of Boise, and Senator David Nelson of Moscow. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is sponsored by Spectrum 2 Art and Dance Studios, specializing in art and dance classes for child
through adult. 525 South Main Street in Moscow. Information at 208-882-1445. UBU Dance Guru at msn.com or spectrum2studio.com. For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.
And we're covering the Idaho Senate vote today, 28-7, along mostly party lines in favor of House Bill 377, an attempt to satisfy demands by lawmakers who support the Idaho Freedom Foundation, whose demands are to root out any social justice indoctrination in schools and colleges. Opponents, including educators, State Board of Education leaders, and the governor, think the bill addresses a problem that largely does not exist. The Senate passed the bill this afternoon and now heads to the governor's desk, and it passed the Senate Education Committee earlier in the afternoon with 10 of the 12 members of the public who testified opposing it. Here is some of that testimony.
Chairman Thane and committee, my name's Andy Grover. I represent the Idaho Association of School Administrators. And as we've seen multiple versions of this bill come through, as you said, some of the early ones on were pretty rough for us to swallow. I think one of the hardest things was just this perception that all of us in education were somehow indoctrinating kids. You know, I've spent the better part of my life now in this profession, and everything we do is try to better our kids and better the better our state. So, you know, when those initial bills came out, it was a huge, as we felt, the slap in our face to, you know, to point finger at us and say we're indoctrinating kids. You know, we do have 15,000 plus teachers, aides, and all kinds of different folks that work in the education system. And what I will say is when something does come up, we have a process that we go through. It's in place. And in my 13 years as a superintendent, it happened to me three times. And Two times they were non-founded, and one time it was, and we took care of that issue with our local school board. So there's a lot of these processes that are already in place. As far as this one, that's in front of us, you know, we've stayed pretty neutral on it. As we've heard, this is the bill to finally get our budgets to come through and push those through, because we're already in late April, and many of us are still working on our FY21 budgets and have to get our FY22 budgets done before that. So while there's still some pieces in here that, you know, we may have some questions to, and, you know, we've heard there isn't a penalty in this, but there is a portion in this bill that talks about, you know, that funding will be withheld, and, you know, we're questioning who's going to make that decision, right? Who's going to decide what emergencies there are, and then if that's the state board or if that's someone else. But overall, as it was stated, this legislation covers pretty much what's in current practice now.
Thank you, Mr. Grover. Any questions? Senator Ward Engelking.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Grover, for being here and for your comments. I was worried about that prohibition on expenditures of money also, and I looked at it, and I wondered, would people be afraid to maybe teach certain areas or certain books, like maybe say Animal Farm or something like that, because they might fall into a trap here? Are you worried about that at all?
Mr. Grover.
Chairman. Senator Ward Engelking, just with as much hype and everything we've had over the past 3 weeks, there is a fear that we will be a little nervous of what we teach, you know, and again, with the policies and practices in place, we should be able to handle most of the issues that come up. But it's also depending on who decides, you know, what those issues are. If it's, again, left to local control, we have those policies in place to deal with it.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Grover. I guess the language on line 32 where it talks about compelling students, to me that makes me think, I try to think of the places in the schools where we compel people, and discipline and disciplinary actions come to my mind. And I've been trying to think of examples, and I was hoping you could help me. Are there any examples of disciplinary actions that might crosswise for this, or do you think that administrators might be more reluctant to discipline students appropriately if they're to get crosswise with this language?
Mr. Grover.
Senator Thane and Senator Nelson, that's a good question, and I guess what I think is that there's always the intent of a law, and then there's the actual practice of the law. And where that falls in will depend on whatever community culture you have, whether it's, you know, far right or whether it's somewhere in the middle. It could be, you know, interpreted differently on what someone thinks we're compelling. You know, if you have a very engaged teacher, someone might feel that they're compelling them to believe one thing when they're just engaged on both sides of an issue. So, I know that's not a very good answer, but I'm not 100% sure how to answer that one.
Thank you, Mr. Grover. Appreciate that.
My name is Claire Buchholz, and I'm a current student at Boise State University. I live in Boise, Legislative District 19. I am providing testimony in opposition to this bill. This bill directly impacts me as a student. The suggestion that universities are forcing people to learn things like critical race theory is frankly a blatant mischaracterization of what actually happens in classrooms. And I think it's very telling that there seems to be no hard evidence of anything like this happening. Parts of our history in this country are difficult and comfortable and uncomfortable. That's just a reality. And having the freedom to learn about this is not so-called indoctrination. In fact, it is quite the opposite. Acknowledging things like a difficult history is actually a sign of a free and open society and a free and open education. Failure to do so, or even worse, government maneuvers like this to make it difficult to talk about this history, is an extremely unoriginal move tried by dictatorships all over the world. In other words, bills like this, ironically, are attempts at indoctrination themselves. Making sure this bill doesn't pass is important to our Kentuckian values, and especially for our community, because Idaho schools need investment, not bizarre and likely unconstitutional censorship.
Good afternoon. I am in testifying in opposition to this bill, primarily because it is unnecessary. I had several pages of notes. I've had to veer off course because of a couple of things that have been spoken to. One, someone said this won't affect the majority of people in Idaho. When teachers go to other states because of the reputation that Idaho sends out, it affects every one of us, especially my grandchildren as well as yours. So it does affect everyone. Number two, we cannot compel students these days to do anything. We can't compel them to put their phones away. We cannot compel them to quit talking while the teacher is talking. We cannot compel them to study for tests. We cannot compel them to show up for school. We cannot compel them to do anything. What makes you think that we can compel them to believe something? That is insane. Now, this is a book that I have used for the last 3 years. I would invite anyone here to find CRT or whatever it is in here. It is not in the index. It is not in the book. There is a discussion of racism. It's on page 412. It says the word racism. That's it. It does not even say what it is. It's used in a caption of a picture. There is a discussion on affirmative action. If I had time, I can't believe my time's almost up. Okay, if I had time, I would tell you that both sides are covered. The real problem here is the state of our children. And if any of you had been in the classroom for any length of time, you would be able to look into those eyes of those children and see that they are blank. Our children are disengaged. They are languishing. And none of you in the legislature are taking this seriously. These children cannot think. I was in ISAT testing last week. They could not even tell me their phone numbers. They could not tell me their addresses. Some of them could not tell me where they, what town they live in. They have issues. They need tutoring. They need good teachers. They need money. They do not need our time wasted on a bill that speaks to this. Are you hearing me? Look in their eyes. There is nothing there.
Thank you.
I waited a long time to say this. We have big issues out there, and you need to go to a school and spend some time. We have huge issues. This is not one of them. We are losing our children.
Jim Reynolds from the City of Eagle, representing myself. And my remarks today are basically on what critical race theory really is. I think when I talked to teachers about it and to those who are running for the board, actually, they really didn't understand what it is. So let's spend a little time with it, if you don't mind. Critical obviously means to find fault, especially for those who are skilled in finding fault. Race is a group of common heredity, although it's been blurred somewhat today. Theory is an unproved explanation of things. The matter is not well understood by most Americans, and yet it is the new institutional orthodoxy that seems to be taught an established fact in many of our schools, not in Idaho. Karl Marx saw the world through the lens of class struggle. It was not successful. But where it was adapted, obviously, with disastrous results. The body count topped 100 million people, and those that survived did not do well. The Marxist intellectuals decided that this would never work in America. We had too strong a middle class. We had a growing standard of living. It had to be changed. So in the 1960s, they focused on race rather than on class. Fortunately for us, the scheme of was overtaken by the civil rights movement. And Dr. King prevailed with his promise of a better life. We decided it was better to fix things than to destroy them. 1990s, the throat theory came back, this time based on identity-based Marxism. Pretty hard to change identity. However, we can change definitions. Now to be white is automatically to be racist and thus guilty of oppression. The idea caught on and has now injected itself into government agencies, public school systems, and corporate human resource departments in the form of diversity training. A new series of buzzwords was developed: equity, social justice, division, or diversity and inclusion. Critical race theorists realized that Marxism, even though it had been taught in many schools for a long time, was a hard sell. Equity, on the other hand, is a word that's non-threatening, and it has sounds something like equality. The differences are vast. Sorry, I'll be brief here, Mr. Chairman. And UCA Professor Cheryl Harris suggests that we eliminate all property rights. Ibram Kendi of Boston University wants to create a department of anti-racism.
Mr. Reynolds, can you wrap up, please? Sorry for the time.
May I continue?
Can you wrap up, please?
Yes, I will. We don't think it's here. It is here. In Cupertino, California, first graders were forced to deconstruct their racial and sexual identity, first graders, rank themselves according to their power and privilege. Middle school and
Mr. Reynolds, your time is up. Thank you for your testimony.
Hi, my name is Tracy Olson. I live here in Boise, Idaho. Thank you for my opportunity to testify. I'm here to oppose HB 377. My kids have both attended public schools, K through 12. My son currently attends BSU. Everyone in my family and extended family fully support all our public schools and the content that they teach, knowing that a well-rounded and complete education is necessary to become a productive and responsible citizen. In our lived experience with public education, we have never heard of any outcry over the indoctrination of students. This is a made-up crisis. It does not exist. And I speak to the overall intent of the bill, and I'm concerned about when the bill goes into law that the overreach of the bill on local levels, because things are not clearly defined in the law. So I'm concerned about how our children will learn about aspects of the Constitution. How will the University of Idaho Law School even function, considering how many controversial law cases exist that require examination and discussion? Is the teaching about the Three-Fifths Compromise now going to be off limits because it offends people? What about the 13th Amendment or the 14th Amendment or the 19th Amendment? Will teachers be banned from discussing the Civil Rights Act at all because it may offend somebody on the local level? Are all these topics now considered even offensive or off limits because somebody, a parent, may find it offensive and how it is taught? This bill could potentially erase the lived experiences of whole populations of people who think, who don't think, act, or believe in like the bill's supporters do. If passed into law, our historical slate of our country and world could potentially be wiped clean and an absolute false history taught to our children. Not only will our kids and young adults suffer from a loss of expansive and inclusive education, but minorities and members of marginalized communities in Idaho could potentially adversely be impacted and harmed. Their stories will not be told, their histories will go unlearned, and therefore misunderstood, misrepresented, or worse, forgotten. By all appearances, this bill is structured to intimidate public institutions from discussing anything that does not conform to the beliefs or fears of those who have promoted it or currently support it. And be forewarned, the likely unintended consequences that will be that the law is equally applied to conservatives as well as progressives. I urge you to hold this in committee.
And that was some of the testimony at the Idaho Senate Education Committee earlier this afternoon. The Education Committee voted in favor of sending House Bill 377 to the Senate floor. The vote in committee was 6-3, and then the Idaho Senate later today voted in favor along largely party lines of House Bill 377. The Idaho Freedom Foundation has promoted the idea that social justice indoctrination is widespread among Idaho's educational institutions and has gotten the fierce support of right-wing legislators who have been playing hardball with the K-12 and higher education budgets until their demands are met. Incoming State Board of Education President Kurt Liebig told the Daily News last week there's no evidence to support claims of indoctrination in the state's public school system. On Thursday and Friday's evening report, we aired extended excerpts from the House Education Committee's public hearing on the issue, as well as the debate on the House floor, both of which occurred last Thursday. Those programs are archived on the KRFP website. We have an additional two clips from the legislature last Thursday. Here's Republican Representative Heather Scott of Blanchard referring to teaching of the novel To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee when speaking on the House floor on Thursday.
The Meridian School District has a sign on their bathroom wall. This is in the middle school, and it's called, I won't tell you what they call it because it's kind of, but they say in there that, fact, every teacher can work on being more culturally responsible. They say that, they say some things in here that just are amazing to me. The question is, I don't even see color. I see my kids for who they are. Color blindness is a myth, and that one that denies students validation to their whole person. So they're basically teaching these, you know, they read this while they're in the bathroom. You need to see color. You need to divide. And I talked to a substitute teacher who gave me some real examples, and that's what I wanted to share today, is how this has creeped into our schools, and we might not even be aware of it. We're aware of kind of some of the obvious things, but these are from a substitute teacher down in the Boise area, and she shared some examples with me. To Kill a Mockingbird, she said the message was made clear. White people are bad, black people are innocent victims. And the students were encouraged to believe that there's an endless era of black victimization. That's being taught down here. In the English class, she said it is more riddled with authors like we are founding historical fiction books and the books that kind of talk about the founding of this country. She said it's been riddled with writings from third world experiences by authors that are completely unheard of, but they are the white, they are a non-white race. So any non-white author is basically being given priority over the historical readings our children. This indoctrination is, she said, it's like a poison in these schools. It just creeps in and it's throughout, but it's hard to address. And I truly think that this bill will be an opportunity to address some of this. I don't know that it'll do it all. And I don't know with the gentleman from on the other side of the rotunda, I don't know if your concerns are valid, but we can go back and fix legislation that may conflict. And if it is a problem that we can't stop this because of the federal money coming through, then we need to remove that part of that language. But we have to do something. And the longer we wait, the more our kids are indoctrinated with this garbage. And so I urge you to vote yes.
That was Republican Representative Heather Scott of Blanchard. State Board of Education officials and lawmakers have reported school superintendents around the state Googling critical race theory to find out what it was during the last week as House Bill 377 made its way through the legislature. One person who actually taught critical race theory was Idaho resident Christopher Luker Ritter, who testified remotely to the House Education Committee Thursday. Ritter countered the Idaho Freedom Foundation's assumption that teaching critical race theory is a bad thing.
I have a BA and an MA from English from U of I and a PhD in rhetoric and composition from WSU, where I studied critical race theory with a handful of professors. I then taught in various public universities over the last 20 years, including U of I, BSU, and CWI. So I have some experience as both a student in courses that included critical race theory and as a teacher that incorporated its lessons into my work. Earlier, Representative Young listed a lot of stories about what critical race theory looks like. Maybe that's what it looks like from the viewpoint of the Idaho Freedom Foundation. That's not what it is. Critical race theory is a lens through which to critique, to question with reason and logic, the ways that racial inequality are built into systems of law, finance, education, and so forth. It's explicitly anti-racist, more specifically anti-white supremacist. So unless you're a white supremacist, you have nothing to fear from critical race theory. It does not divide white people from people of color unless those white people want to be divided. I can personally attest that the facts of historical systemic racism racism are hard to hear. As a well-meaning white person that tries to overcome his own prejudices, the fact of my white privilege was a hard pill to swallow. I felt defensive at first about my own place in society and about the actions of my ancestors. But I was never once told that I was responsible for my ancestors. My dignity as a white man was never threatened. That's not a tenet of critical race theory. You need to kill this bill, which is an unconstitutional limit on academic freedom. Stop punishing teachers for having ideas you misunderstand and fear. The vast majority of teachers don't address critical race theory at all, and even the ones like me that know what it is are not using it to harass or brainwash your children. Any U.S. public teacher worth their salt is engaged in creating the unified America that's promised in our founding documents, but has still not been achieved.
And that was Christopher Luker Ritter testifying remotely to the Idaho House Education Committee Thursday. Republican Senator Fred Martin, who is the Idaho Senate Health and Welfare Committee chair, says he will not schedule a hearing on a bill from Republican Representative Kerry Hanks of St. Anthony prohibiting cities, health districts, or other jurisdictictions from imposing emergency mask mandates to prevent disease spread during a pandemic. Martin said the Senate Health and Welfare Committee stopped meeting several weeks ago and will not hear additional bills. Such action typically kills a bill. The Idaho Press reports Senator Martin declined to say the bill is dead, but lawmakers usually consider bills that don't get committee hearings as dead. The bill had already passed the House by a wide margin. Representative Hanks and supporters of the bill claim mask mandates during a pandemic violate their personal rights. More than 2,000 Idahoans have died of coronavirus so far, and health officials say mask wearing in public is an important way to reduce the spread of coronavirus. The Associated Press reports some counties and about a dozen cities have imposed mask mandates in Idaho during the coronavirus pandemic. Some of them have been repealed as infection rates have declined in local areas. Moscow's mask mandate is still in effect and is scheduled to stay in effect until June 9th unless coronavirus spread statistics in the city and surrounding county meet certain metrics that the city council decided on last November. Senator Martin said, "Today, I don't like the federal government telling me as a state senator what we should be doing. So I don't like us telling the cities, the counties, the school districts what to do unless it's something they're coming to us for to make changes." Martin also said he had an issue with the bill's provision that state courts cannot require masks. Martin said, "I'm not sure we have or should have the authority to be telling the courts what to do." The Moscow Board of Adjustment late last week approved a conditional use permit to allow the Christ Church-affiliated Logos School to add classrooms at the south side of Moscow in the former Bonkers Indoor Play Center building and the Intersect Community Church of South Main Street, which is located south of Palouse River Drive. Logos School is located on West A Street, and Christ Church uses the gymnasium there for its Sunday church services. School officials say the school has had to turn away potential students because it does not have enough room for them. The Daily News reported Moscow Board of Adjustment member and former mayor Marshall Comstock said, "I think it's a good use of the building for now. I hate to see vacant buildings in the city of Moscow, and if they can accommodate a good fit for it, I'm all in favor of that." Logos is building a large school on the northeastern section of Moscow near Mountain View Park and is funding construction of that school as money comes in. The property where the new classrooms will be located is in the Moscow Motor Business Zoning District, and K through 12 private schools require conditional use permits in those zones. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP thanks its donors and sponsors, including Hodgins Drug and Hobbies of 307 South Main Street in Moscow. Hodgins features a pharmacy, educational toys, and hobbies. Hodgins also sells and services hearing aids. You can call Hodgins at 208-882-5536. KRFP is also sponsored by Fiddler's Ridge Farm, a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving the Palouse since 1992. Two locations to serve you, 2730 Highway 95 South in Moscow and 1001 Fiddler's Ridge Loop in Potlatch. 208-875-1003.
The Washington legislature adjourned for the year last night, marking the end of a session that was held mostly remotely. The last vote was a 57-40 party line vote in the House, passing a $59.2 billion two-year budget for the state. The Senate passed it 27-22 on a nearly party line vote, with only Democratic Senator Mark Mullett of Issaquah voting against. Legislative leaders had only released the final reconciled version of the budget on Saturday, although similar versions had passed both houses earlier. The budget was more than 1,000 pages long. The budget will take $1.8 billion out of the state's $2.8 billion rainy day fund and implements a capital gains tax, which the legislature approved in the waning days of the session. It also allocates $10 billion in federal stimulus money on top of the $59.2 billion in state money. Key allocations include $130 million for wildfire response and forest health, and $147 million for foundational public health services. The legislature also unanimously passed a $6.3 billion capital budget over the weekend, funding construction projects at Washington State University, Eastern Washington University, and Spokane Falls Community College. The spokesman review reports Washington State University will get a new life sciences building in Vancouver. Renovations for the school's biomedical and health sciences project in Spokane and demolition of an old building on the Pullman campus. The capital budget also pays for broadband access expansion and new housing projects. The Senate passed a capital gains tax yesterday by a 25-24 vote. It is a 7% tax on the sales of stocks, bonds, some properties, and businesses if profits are more than $250,000 per year. Exceptions include real estate, livestock, and small family-owned businesses. Republicans have opposed the idea for years, saying it violates the state constitution, which forbids state income taxes. Democratic supporters say the capital gains tax will add $415 million in annual revenue when the tax goes into full effect in 2023. The legislature passed other pieces of legislation in the final weekend, including an $11.8 billion transportation budget. That budget heavily taps federal money to the tune of $1 billion. $600 million of that will backfill pandemic losses. It also includes $400 million to remove culverts, which are blocking migrating salmon. Another $194 million will go towards the ongoing North Spokane Corridor Freeway project during the next 2 years. Senate Transportation Committee Chair Steve Hobbs said on the House floor, "All this budget does is keep the lights on. We really need to have some form of transportation investment, so we're not going to go off a cliff, which will happen in a year or two." Lawmakers also passed a drug possession bill Saturday to replace the simple possession law the state Supreme Court ruled unconstitutional this year. Simple possession means possession of drugs for personal use and not packaged or intended for sale. The bill reduces possession of certain amounts of drugs from felonies to misdemeanors and makes it much more likely those charged with simple possession will be channeled into treatment instead of jail. Possession will now be a simple misdemeanor with penalties of up to 90 days in jail and a $1,000 fine. The spokesman review reported Democratic Representative Jamila Taylor of Federal Way said, We know the war on drugs is a failed policy. We know we have better options, community-driven options out there. The bill also overhauls the state's behavioral health system and creates a legislative interim committee to review the state's drug laws and come up with a long-term plan by 2023. The bill stipulates if there is no new long-term plan by 2023, the state would end all prosecutions for simple drug possession. The bill passed 80-18 in the House and 26-23 in the Senate. Ninth District House Republicans Joe Schmick of Colfax and Mary Dye of Pomeroy voted in favor. District 9 Republican Senator Mark Schessler of Richville voted against. Other bills which passed in the final days of the legislature include a cap-and-trade bill for carbon emissions, a bill requiring police to intervene when they see other police using inappropriate use of force, a bill to ban open carry of firearms at demonstrations and at the Capitol campus in Olympia, and a bill banning certain police tactics, such as chokeholds, neck restraints, and most military equipment. Those bills are now headed to the governor's desk. Governor Jay Inslee signed a right to counsel bill last Thursday, which orders the State Office of Civil Legal Aid to draft and implement a plan that ensures low-income tenants can get legal representation when they face eviction. Washington Governor Jay Inslee announced Saturday health workers can resume administering the Johnson & Johnson vaccine one-dose course after a 9-day pause in the state. The state halted using the Johnson & Johnson vaccine as a cautionary measure after health workers reported blood clots in 15 women nationwide earlier in the month. That was out of 8 million people who received the shot. State Health Department spokesperson Julie Grauert said the state held back 170,000 Johnson & Johnson doses. Vaccine providers will now offer information about the risks of the J&J vaccine at the time of vaccination. Governor Inslee wrote in a news release, "The benefits of the J&J vaccine outweigh the risks associated with it. We want to keep as many people free from COVID and out of the hospital as possible, and the J&J vaccine will help us get through this pandemic. I encourage people to get whatever vaccine is available to them." Health officials in the Okanagan Valley say two super spreader events have led to a surge in COVID-19 cases in Ferry County. Northeast Tri-County Health Officer Sam Artsis says two events at the Fraternal Order of Eagles building in Republic, April 10th and 11th, have led to dozens of positive COVID-19 tests. Artsis said health officials have identified patient zero. He said of the 63 new coronavirus cases in Ferry County in the past 2 weeks, most are tied to Republic. Two Ferry County residents are hospitalized with the disease. Ferry County has a 2-week case rate of 810 cases per 100,000 residents, meaning the county will likely have to move back to phase 2 of the state's reopening plan next week. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, we're expecting mostly clear conditions tonight and tomorrow, low 34, high 61. Partly cloudy Tuesday night, low 38. Mostly sunny, high 66 Wednesday. Mostly cloudy, low 46 Wednesday night. And partly sunny on Thursday, high 75. Currently 57 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'll repeat that address in a moment again. You can also go to the KRFP.org website to find out other ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming to let our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. You can use the Patreon button, and there's a PayPal option as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. And also look in your mail pile. There might be a spring fundraising letter sent to your address from KRFP. Thanks for all who have contributed. Coming up next, we got Eat the Airwaves Part 2. And that'll be followed at about 7:10 by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Normally scheduled for about 6:30, but we're running late today because of all the news out of the Idaho legislature that people have been wanting to hear about. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a great evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, Community Radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and by the Environmental Defense Institute, actively engaged with issues involving the Idaho National Laboratory, a Department of Energy nuclear site. EDI advocates for environmentally sound nuclear policy decisions.